Hello, my name is Samantha Christie. I am a teacher candidate in the University of Washington's Master's in Elementary Teaching program. Welcome to my Critical Family podcast. Today, I'm going to talk about my exploration of my family's history. I'm primarily going to talk about my mom's side of the family because very little is known about my dad's side. All that we know about his side is that his dad, who was my grandfather, passed away over 20 years ago, and we know that he was adopted, but we don't know anything about his birth parents. My dad's mom, or my grandmother, her father ran away when she was a child, and we don't know anything about him. My dad's family tends to avoid talking about their history, which is something I definitely want to investigate in the future. But I have a feeling it's going to take a long time to uncover, and I'm not sure I'll ever know the whole story. Therefore, due to the time constraints of only having one quarter to research my family history, I decided I want to take a deep dive into my mom's family's history, specifically their connectedness to Indigenous peoples, both relatives and those whose lands they live on. As background, both of my parents grew up in a small town in Wisconsin. The town is called New London, and it is in Waupaca County. New London is about an hour west of Green Bay. Currently, New London is primarily an Irish and German community. It's actually well known for its St. Patrick's Day parade that attracts people from all over Wisconsin. With that in mind, the town is primarily white with very few people of color. I took some time and I researched the New London website, and it brags about generations of hardworking people who have shaped New London into a community. I interpreted this to really reference white people. So when I was reading it, I really kept thinking, who lived in New London before colonization? Whose lands were New London originally? This is something I will get into a little later in the podcast when I am also talking about my family history. Before I get started, jumping into the main portion of my podcast, I want to give listeners a heads up about some of the social studies themes that we'll be hearing from the National Council for the Social Studies that are interwoven into my family history. The first theme is time, continuity, and change, especially around my mom's family history and her family's secret that has actually impacted our family for generations and continues to impact us now and will probably impact us in the future. The second theme is people, places, and environments, specifically around where my family is from and who lived there before my family. My story definitely touches on some other themes, but these are the two main ones that will appear repeatedly. Some social studies standards that are in line with my family history are individual and family, and this is really talked about a lot in kindergarten. I really related to the standard 5.4.1, which is retells and explains personal history, which is quite literally what this podcast is about and what I've been working on this quarter. The second standard that my podcast really connects to is First Nations, which we talked about, which would normally be talked about in third grade in a typical elementary school. I really found that I connected with the history section, especially around interactions between people, and the geography section, with one of the standards being 3.2.1, understands how the environment affects cultural groups and how cultural groups affect the environment. My family secret. One of the most interesting and at the same time saddening things that I came to learn about my mother's family through this project was their direct connection to Indigenous peoples. On my mom's father's side, I learned that we have Native American blood. Victoria Shepro was the grandmother to my grandfather, so she is my great-great-grandmother. She was born in 1883, and she lived until she was 82 years old. According to passed-down family stories, Victoria was allegedly Chippewa, which is also called Ojibwe in Wisconsin. Although I'll question this in a bit, in general, I learned that very little is known about Victoria because she was kept as a family secret. All that we know for sure from the stories, or at least what we think we know for sure,
is that she lived in Menasha, Wisconsin, which is pretty close to New London, with her husband Eugene Demney, who was of Belgian ancestry. And they had 9 children together. According to our family stories, it was considered pretty close to taboo at the time for a white person to marry a Native American, which would line up with the history of colonization and forced assimilation. Part of this tabooness fed into Victoria's identity being hidden. My mom told me that it wasn't actually until she was a late teenager that she even found out that Victoria was Native American. Her family refused to talk about it as an attempt to erase it from our family history. This attempted elimination got so bad that Victoria's own daughter, who was half Native American, never admitted to being half Native. She also went to extreme precautions to cover her skin as much as possible when out in the sun, so she would wear long sleeves and big hats so that she would avoid darkening her skin so she wouldn't look Native. Had it been discovered that she was half Native, she would have been socially rejected and ostracized. After hearing Victoria's story, I realized that it's a story about assimilation and erasure. She grew up in a time when white colonizers were trying to assimilate Native Americans. In the words of an article written by Rutgers University entitled American Indians in Early Wisconsin, it was a time when, and I quote, de-Indianizing Native Americans was considered extremely important by the U.S. government. And although I know nothing about Victoria's schooling, I would assume that if she went to school, she probably grew up in a system that attempted to erase her Native culture. I base this around the history that we've talked about in class about boarding schools, given that she was born and raised in the era of boarding schools. Additionally, I base this around the history of Indigenous peoples in Wisconsin prior to and around the time of Victoria's life, which I will talk about in a little bit. Erasure and assimilation were also reflected in Victoria's decision to marry a white man. I was really found it interesting, this conflict in my family between combining histories of a colonizer and colonized, oppressor and oppressed. These two different sides came together, and ultimately it became my family. When my mom kept telling me about Victoria and how little we knew, and even the parts we did know, I kept coming back to the article we read in class, or for class, titled Broadening the Meaning of Citizenship Education, Native Americans and Tribal Nationhood by Jeanette Haynes Ryder. This article talked about citizenship of Native Americans. One quote kept sticking out to me as I read through this article. It was, to experience cultural imperialism is to experience how the dominant meanings of a society render the particular perspectives of one's own group invisible at the same time as they stereotype one's group and mark it as other, on page 72. When I was thinking about this in relation to Victoria, I realized that Victoria's marriage to a white man and her forced hidden identity as a Native American, they really struck me as this idea of cultural imperialism. What I mean by this is that her Native American ancestry and history were deemed unimportant and even harmful. She had to hide them in order to protect her family from stereotypes and hatred. Remember when I said I was going to question whether Victoria was Chippewa? I also said I was going to dig a little deeper into the Indigenous groups who lived in Wisconsin prior to my ancestors. I'm going to do both of those things now. In this section, I'm going to take an analytical stance and really problematize the family history I have been told. I was inspired to do this by Mary Cowway and her idea of a history detective. In this, she frames her students as detectives who are responsible for figuring out what happened in history. They look at different points of view and figure out, you know, maybe this side like expanded a little here and really that wasn't as accurate. Or maybe this version's a little more correct. So I'm going to try to do that with my own family history, because I think it's critical that we know where our information is coming from and how reliable it is. So I think it's really important to note that all the information that I was told in my interview with my mom about Victoria was based on passed down stories. These stories, or these small bits of information, are recorded in our family Bible, which I didn't know was a thing. But apparently, in our family, and in both sides of my mom's family, actually, they have family Bibles that are very common for Catholic families. And they are passed down to the firstborn child in every generation. And that child is responsible for documenting the family tree. So names, birth dates, birthplaces, spouse, etc. So that is actually where most of the information about Victoria is coming from, via my mom. So I don't actually have access to this family Bible. It is in Wisconsin with my grandfather, who I actually don't talk to quite often. So all of my information is secondhand through stories about the Bible. So I really wanted to question my family's story, especially the part about Victoria being a Chippewa. I was really curious. I'm like, was she? Was she not? Because my mom wasn't completely certain. So I looked at maps and I decided, let's see, if she was Chippewa, where would she have lived? Or most likely, where would she have grown up? And it turns out the Chippewa in general lived in northern Wisconsin. Unfortunately, my mom doesn't know where Victoria was born. And again, we don't have access to the family Bible. However, we do know for certain that she ended up, at least the last 45 years of her life, living in eastern Wisconsin in Menasha. This was actually originally land that belonged to the Menominee tribe. And I decided I wanted to do quite a bit of research on that because even though we think Victoria was Chippewa, we aren't entirely sure because it would have been quite a distance to move from northern Wisconsin to eastern Wisconsin. So I really wanted to look up the Menominee history. And it turns out that Wisconsin was actually a big area for the fur trade industry. So the Menominee used to be spread out all across eastern Wisconsin. They took up the areas that are now New London and Menasha, which is why it kind of makes me question, could Victoria have been a Menominee? The current reservation, so in between 1800 and 1850, the Menominee was the largest American Indian population in Wisconsin. It actually gave up a large amount of land. It sold 11,600 square miles of land on the lower Fox River to the government because of the pressure the government was placing on it. And that's based on the article, American Indians in Early Wisconsin. That area that it ended up selling to the government is actually the area that became New London and Menasha. Which, again, makes me kind of go back to the idea of maybe Victoria was Menominee instead of Chippewa. Which is a really interesting idea of we don't really know a lot about our family history. It was also an interesting concept that I kept going back to the New London website and thinking about how it kept saying how proud they were of how hardworking of people had built the town. And it was really interesting that my family is made up of people, possibly people who made up the town. A lot of my family on my mom's side were immigrants, and that's something I want to look into more in the future, but I didn't have as much time due to the one quarter time constraint. But part of my family is made of these hardworking people that the website brags about. And the other part of my family are potentially the people who were driven away from the land. So it's again going back to this conflict in my family of colonizer versus colonized, oppressor versus oppressed. So let's fast forward a bit. I was really inspired by Agarwal Ragnar's idea of connecting the past to the present. I really wanted to think about how has this family secret affected my family to this day, or even in the more recent past. When I think about this, I really think of the fact that still not many people in my family talk about Victoria. There are very few people in our family who know that she was a Native American. And as I had mentioned earlier, my mom didn't know until she was in her late teens. Another way this has actually impacted our family a little further back in time was that my grandfather, or Victoria's grandson, was 1/4 Native American. He could have gone to college for free because of the scholarships that were set up at the time in Wisconsin. But had he done that, he would have had to admitted that he was 1/4 Native American, which would have meant that he was admitting that his mother was half Native American, which, as I mentioned earlier, was socially considered unacceptable and would have been ostracized. And I think that really affects the way my grandfather is today, how he doesn't talk about Victoria. He doesn't talk about being related to someone who was Native American. And I think that's why, to this day, it's still a family secret, and it's something that I didn't know much about until this project. And it's something that I've reached out to a couple of my cousins, and they had no idea. So I think it's really a very tightly held secret. And that's really how it's been affecting us today, is we just aren't aware of it. We aren't told. The stories aren't passed down, which really feels like a loss in our family. In this podcast, I've talked a lot about my mom's family history, especially on my grandpa's side. I talked a lot about my great-great-grandmother, Victoria Shepro, and how she was Native American, but not much is known or passed down about her. And I hope my audience can see that this is really connected to the social studies themes of time, continuity, and change, especially around my mom's family and how who's been recognized as family and what parts of their family and identity have been recognized has changed over time and impacted generations and continues to impact us to today. It also really interplays with people, places, and environments as I looked at what Indigenous groups lived in what parts of Wisconsin, and trying to figure out, was Victoria Chippewa or was she Menominee, or will we ever really know? It also really interwove with the standards of individual and family, specifically around history and the idea of retelling personal history. And it interwove also with the First Nations standards and the idea of looking at who were the original people of this land and where did they live and why. In the future, I want to look into a lot more of my mom's history on my grandma's side. I didn't get a ton of time to talk to them. They've been busy on some family trips, so I'm excited to get to talk to them when they get back about immigration, because I know they came over from Ireland and Germany predominantly, at least that's what I've been told in stories. So that's something I wanted to look into in the future. And I also am hoping that I can look into a little more of my father's family history. So I'm hoping that I will see you, or at least you'll hear me, back here in the future talking about more of my critical family podcast in history. I want to give a quick shout out to the resources that really helped me dig deeper into my family history. From our in-class resources, I used Rushi Agarwal Raghunath's Social Studies, Literacy, and Social Justice in the Common Core Classroom, Mary Cowway's Black Ants and Buddhists, Jeanette Haynes Ryder's Broadening the Meaning of Citizenship Education, Native Americans and Tribal Nationhoods. I also used the National Council for the Social Studies, the National Curriculum Standards for Social Studies, Chapter 2, the Themes of Social Studies, and the Washington State K-12 Social Studies Learning Standards, version 1.2. Outside of classroom resources, I used Rutgers University's article, American Indians in Early Wisconsin. I also used maps from Wisconsin First Nations, American Indian Studies in Wisconsin, and I used the New London website.